happy to have Cindy Chen visiting us from Yale. So Cindy is a student working with Nikhil Padmanabhan. And so she's going to tell us about her work on probing primordial non-Gaussianities.
Thank you very much, Neil. Hi, I'm Shinyi. I'm very happy to be here and talking about my recent work on probing permanent non-Gaussianity with a new approach by reconstructing the initial conditions. So this work is being done together with my advisor, Nikhil Padmanabhan, and in collaboration with Daniel Eisenstein and Albert Zhu and Sasha Gins. The current observations through CMB and larger structure are in very good agreement with the concept of inflation, but we still don't understand the mechanism behind inflation. And the ongoing and next generation cosmological experiments have unprecedented precisions and probe ever large volumes, so they provide us unique opportunities to study this physics in the very early universe and at very high energies and can potentially uncover the nature of inflation. And both CMB and larger structure surveys offer us various ways to probe inflation. So inflation seeded the density fluctuations that we can observe today. And so the imprints of inflationary ripples can be measured through CMB and larger structure. And one of the most powerful probes is primordial non-Gaussianities, and that's deviations from initial Gaussian density fluctuations, and that's consequences of many inflation models. So inflation models generally predict very Gaussian initial conditions, but some more complicated models predict there's deviations from Gaussian initial conditions. So the size of PNG can be parameterized by this parameter FNL, and there's different types, and today I'll focus on the local type. So the local type primordial potential, I'll try this. Primordial potential has this form, and this lowercase phi is the Gaussian field, and the phi square is in the configuration space, so it's local in the configuration space, and this FNL local is the parameter we want to measure. So the local type is a sensitive probe of multi-field models. So models with multiple fields generally predict large FNL values, and models with single field generally predict very small FNL values. So to be able to distinguish between these two broad classes of inflation models, we need to achieve a very high sensitivity. So we need to achieve a measurement error less than one. And so that's very difficult, and the signal is very small. So let me show you how small this is. So on the right-hand side, I have three simulations, all in matter density field with FNL 0 plus 100 minus 100 at redshift 127. So I'm plotting the PDF of the overdensity here, and there's three PDFs on top of each other. So it's very difficult to distinguish them. And then the lower right, I'm showing the matter power spectrum ratio. So between FNL plus 100 and 0, and FNL minus 100 and 0, and at ratio of 0. And so at k equals to about 0.5, that's less than 2% difference. So it's very small signal. OK, so.
This is for the nonlinear matter density field, nonlinear matter density field?
This is ratio of 0. That's nonlinear. Yeah, but it's matter power spectrum.
Right.
Okay.
It's computed using like a little bit or something.
It's only matter density field.
Yeah, but it's nonlinear, you said, right?
Is it from simulation?
It's nonlinear in the sense that it's redshift zero.
So what do you mean? Your extrapolated redshift zero, or is it?
It's from simulations, so I computed power spectrum from the simulation. It's a matter density field.
Okay.
That's right. Okay. Yeah. It's the same simulation, just at different redshift. Just the overdensity is easier to plot at a high redshift. But it is still very small at redshift zero. Okay, so the current best measurement comes from CNB, from the Planck satellite. So they measure, they have the measurement error about 5. However, the CNB is limited by its 2D nature, so it's limited modes we can probe from the 2D observation. So the forecast shows that there will only be about a factor of 2 improvement in the future. But CNB secondary probes cross-correlated with larger structure, for example, CNB lensing or KSD can potentially have more powerful constraints. I will not go into the details in this talk, but today I want to focus on larger structure surveys. So the current best measurement from larger structure is about 20. It's from EBOS using a quasar sample. But there's more opportunities with larger structure because there's many more modes to probe from 3D observations. And the state of our technique is the scale-dependent bias on galaxy power spectrum. So here on the right-hand side, I'm showing this scale-dependent feature on the galaxy power spectrum as a function of FNL, and it's and it has a one over k square and transfer function dependence. So this feature is on very large scale, it's below 0.1. And so the systematic is very large, and it's also limited by cosmic variance. And so forecast for DESI for this method shows that the measurement error will be about 10. And so that's still not enough to achieve our sensitivity goal of measurement error less than 1. Adding bispectrum gives more information, and that can tighten the constraints. So for example, forecast from spherics shows that going from power spectrum to bispectrum, there will be about a factor of 3 improvements, and there will be about a factor of 4 improvement going from power spectrum to a joint analysis of power spectrum and bispectrum. But this forecast might be a little optimistic, so the improvement might be very large, and also it depends on the different survey configurations. But we can expect that there will be some improvement. Okay, so there's also challenges with using bispectrum. So first, there's gravity-induced nonlinearity. So there's very large bispectrum from gravity. And second, there's many different triangle configurations. And so the data vector would be very large. And also associated coherence matrix would be challenging to compute. Okay, so for large bispectrum, we can mitigate this with a technique of reconstruction, which can help us remove nonlinearity. For large data vectors, we can compute a near optimal 2-point bispectrum estimator. So that's computationally inexpensive. Okay, so this will be the. Oh yeah, this will come later.
Okay.
So this will be the focus of my talk. So I'll introduce a new approach to constrain primordial non-Gaussianity by reconstruction. So I'll first talk about reconstructing the initial conditions, and then we'll take a look at the information at the field level, and then we'll look at this near optimal bispectral estimator. Okay, so first reconstruction. So reconstruction means a few different things in cosmology. So here I mean reconstruction of the initial conditions. So that's reversing LA time density field back to initial density field. So this strategy has only been mostly used in baryon acoustic oscillation analysis. So I will briefly talk about this idea in the context of BAL. So here's the idea behind the standard reconstruction. So that's the algorithm that has been used in real surveys in the last decade. Okay, so in early universe, the density is very smooth, and so this acoustic feature is very clear. Here I'm only showing one overdense region. And then as the universe evolves, this nonlinearity comes in, and so these objects spread out, so that broadens the acoustic feature. And then we can estimate a displacement field here in the case of a standard reconstruction, the Lagrangian displacement field, and then move the particles back to their initial positions. And so in this way, we can remove nonlinearities and restore the BL peak. So this technique has been used in BL analysis in the last decade and has reduced the distance error for BL by about a factor of two. So that's pretty good. So here I'm just showing this restoring of a BL peak in the two-point correlation function. So in the late time, the two-point correlation function, this BL peak has been washed out, so it's very damped. And then early universe, this peak is very sharp. So then reconstruction can restore this peak. These two lines are just with different parameters. And so that helps measuring the distance scale. Okay, so this is very successful for BL. However, this reconstructed density field is still very nonlinear. So here I'm showing normalized density field, slices of density field. So this is late time density field, initial density field. These are all matter density field. And this is reconstructed density field. So as you can see that this is less nonlinear, but still pretty far from the initial condition. But on large scale, this looks better. So here I smooth the field at 5 megaparsec. So it's on very large scale. So then the standard reconstruction and initial condition are very close. So this works for BAO because BAO is on very large scale. All right. So but this is not enough for PNG. And so how do we better go from this late time density field to the linear density field? So I use a hybrid method that combines the convolutional neural network with traditional algorithm, which is based on perturbation theory. But let's take a look at what would happen if we just use CNN by itself. Okay, so this is the density field again, late time and initial density field. This is CNN trained with the late time density field. So my network learns information from this region, so that's a 76 megaparsec cube region, and then to determine the reconstructed density at the center point. So I do this for every single grid point on the grid. So every grid point is being reconstructed. And in this process, I consider the neighbor points by grouping them together in a batch, and I train 8 simulations every single grid point. I have a 512 cube grid, so that means about half million.
Is training done on non-Gaussian initial conditions?
Sorry, it's no PNG in the simulation for training.
But isn't that a problem?
Why?
Because I mean, if the training is done on Gaussian initial conditions, but then you're looking for non-Gaussian signal, I mean, there might be a systematic bias in.
So the reconstruction, the point of reconstruction is to remove the gravity-induced nonlinearity. So we don't want any PNG there in the field.
Oh, but if there's some mixing between the two, then we
have to know. Then if you have the PNG in reconstruction, then you will remove PNG at the same time.
Okay, that's something you want to check, I guess. Maybe you have to.
Yeah, but you don't want to remove the PNG, I guess.
Yeah.
So okay,
so the purpose of reconstruction is to remove the gravity-induced nonlinearity, and
so
then
reconstruct the initial linear field.
Yeah.
Right. You know, but if you train using non-Gaussian in initial conditions, they'll have non-Gaussianity, and then I don't see why.
Okay. So if you use a non-Gaussian, if you use the PNG initial condition, yeah. Okay. Sure. But then it's that would be difficult to train, and you have different types of PNG and then different values of FNLs. And
it's more expensive, I agree.
Well, if you're focusing at one type, then we could just train it. You can do training with that type, and just different values of so-called FNL in your initial.
Okay, yeah, I can focus on one type, but then yes, there's still we need a wide range of FNL.
Like they're training with 8 simulations already, right? I mean, that's so small.
Yeah, but I mean that's definitely possible to do. It's but we're choosing this approach for now.
So that you have a cheap way of kind of interpolating between those and getting more reconstructed initial simulations.
I will talk more in the next slide about retrain reconstruction. But yeah, so I'm just showing what would happen if we don't include the traditional algorithm, just training the nonlinear density field. Yeah, I mentioned a hybrid approach, but I'm just first showing that what would happen. This is not the good case, but
that's true. Sorry.
Sorry for confusion. All right. Okay. So I train 8 simulations. So I will have about 500,000 data points to train, and to predict normalized field. And then also I use this initial density field as my target. Okay, right, so this looks not good. It's CNN trained with state time density field. So this is still very far from the initial condition. Okay, so here I train the network with reconstructed density field. So here reconstructed by the standard reconstruction algorithm. Did I answer your question? Okay, so this looks much closer to the initial condition, and so training.
Why did this method like did so badly?
I'll explain. Right, so the key is to train reconstructed density field, and that's because CNN is relatively local, so it doesn't have access to a very large scale, but the algorithm provides very good approximation on large scales because perturbation theory works very well on large scales. And then the CNN can reconstruct further onto smaller scales.
So what is the large scale? Like you mentioned.
Oh, OK. So I have a 1 gigaparsec box. You're asking like.
Yeah, I'm saying like when you say reconstruction is pretty good at large scales, what is the scale?
Oh. I guess that depends on different redshift and other settings. So here my this effective kernel is 76 megaparsecs. So outside this region, the traditional algorithm should have done a pretty good job.
It's sort of this puzzling, right? You know, because on your previous slide, right? So if you show that again. Like the variance, you know, for your middle example is like so much smaller than the variance in the right plot. Yeah.
The variance?
I mean, well, like the color range is like so much smaller, I guess, in the middle panel than in the right panel.
Oh, I see.
And that variance should be dominated. I mean, you know, you would think by small scale modes, which you would think you would think that the CNN would be doing well on that, but you're saying that it doesn't. It's just sort of puzzling.
Sorry, I guess I'm not following what you're saying.
I guess I'm just trying to understand why the CNN here is just like so bad at at predicting like the variance of these very small scale modes.
Okay, so I'm not sure how. What affects the variance the most? But when I don't reconstruct the large scale first, and then just ask the CNN to learn the small scales, then the large scale is still poorly reconstructed, and then this the loss function is in real space, in configuration space, and so for example, I will show you later when we plot in case space, then we can see clearly large scale, small scales. And then without reconstruction on large scale, then the small scale would still be affected.
Speculative double variance is like a, just a symptom of not getting small scales, right? Like the CNN is the freedom to set those scales to zero and then just hang that would reduce the loss function.
Wait, sorry, could you say it again?
I was speculating that the reason for the low variance in this plot is that the CNN just fails to get the small scales, right? And then if that happens, if you're all going to leave that, which, yeah, if that happens, it will. The power spectrum, I guess, you know, for the middle panel, you know, must have much less high K power than the power spectrum for the right panel. Yeah, you're right. I think that's about it.
Okay.
I think the real puzzle is why the CNN seems to do such a bad job if you don't help it out by getting it to reconstruction for the first.
Yes, again, it's because, so here I'm showing. This is 195 megaparsecs. It has a large scale. It has a region outside this receptor field, but our large scale is now being reconstructed. Yes, Dustin.
Well, so convolution is a linear operation. So does the model even have the ability to apply a nonlinear operation?
Why is convolution a linear operation?
But convolution is a.
There's a neuron part, yeah. Which is nonlinear. The neuron part that we.
Yeah, no, but it goes through multiple layers and everything, but does the model have the ability to apply nonlinear operations to the data?
Yeah, well, it is, right? Because it's going from, you know, from that left thing, which is like so nonlinear, to the, you know, to this middle one, which is very different.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it can do nonlinear operations.
Okay.
So,
smooth it can be.
Well, smoothly, like, yeah, exactly, like smooth, like averaging is a linear operation. Sharpening could also be a linear operation, but like to move particles around, you need a nonlinear operation, don't you? So I guess that's the question, like, can it actually do anything nonlinear?
I guess I'm not clear why you say CNN is not a linear operation.
Well, I'm not saying anything about the NN part, but the convolution part. Squares of pixels.
Okay, but I have multiple layers of of convolution.
So I think usually CNN means that it's a nonlinear activation function, mm-hmm. Like every loop in between the layers.
Okay, then each layer you have a linear operation, then you would be doing a linear.
Yeah.
But if each layer you have something that has like a nonlinear activation function, then you
can't do a nonlinear operation. So, but then is it effectively like a convolution, which is linear, and then a nonlinear operation on those scalar results.
So the activation function that's nonlinear, that's to turn a linear thing to nonlinear. And then I have multiple layers of that. And the multiple layers, which all of them have activation functions, which are nonlinear.
Okay.
All right, so this is much better. Okay, so here I'm showing the performance more quantitatively. It's cross correlation coefficient with the initial condition. Okay, so if reconstruction is perfect, then we will see this quantity to be just at one, in all case. Okay, so here's the late time density field and this green line. And then yellow dotted line is CNN trained with the late time density field. And then these two dashed lines are CNN, algorithms. I'm showing two algorithms. They're a little different. So ES3 is what I mentioned earlier, the standard reconstruction algorithm. HE18 has a few differences. It's an iterative approach, and it also includes two LPT, among other differences. And then these two solid lines are CNN with algorithm. So it's CNN trained with reconstructed density field and reconstructed by these two algorithms. So we see that there's significant improvements with this hybrid approach. And these two lines are very close, so the input reconstruction doesn't matter too much. Okay, so this is a real space matter field at redshift zero.
So basically, CNN doesn't do anything on late time. It's completely. Actually, which one is this?
So this is a CNN. This is a hybrid approach.
Right,
so,
that's a hybrid, but the one that the CNN plus late time, which one is that?
Yeah, so that's yellow dotted line.
That's, yes, okay, so it does fit a little bit better.
Wait, sorry, you mean large scale or small scale?
Small scale,
yeah, it's here. Yeah, so this look worse. That's what I mentioned earlier, because my loss function is in configuration space, and this is a K space, and so it still needs the large scale correct to have improvement. Okay, so this is redshift space. It's very similar improvement. So CNN with traditional algorithm that's still doing much better. Okay, so we did a few robustness tests. So here's generalization to other cosmologies. So these two bands are the two traditional algorithms, ES3 and HE18, that correspond to a wide range of cosmologies within Lambda CDM. And then for the CNN, so I train the model on the fiducial cosmology and then apply to other cosmologies. And so these two bands correspond to the performance of CNN with traditional algorithm, correspond to a wide range of cosmologies. So there's still much improvement. And so this shows that the model can generalize very well to a wide range of cosmologies. OK, so here I'm showing that CNN can minimize the variance from input reconstruction. So one of the most important input parameter for traditional algorithms is the smoothing scale. So here I'm showing this ES3 and HE18, these two algorithms that correspond to a wide range of input smoothing scales. So these two wide bands, and then the CNN, that's these two much narrower bands. So this shows that the model can remove much of the variance from the input reconstruction, and that includes both different algorithms and different smoothing scales. So this means that we don't need to worry too much about.
What are the smoothing scales here?
It's from the values. Mean it's 7.5 megaparsec to 15 megaparsec Gaussian smoothing. Okay, so far I've been talking about only the matter density field and very high number density. So here I'm showing lower number density. So I subsampled from this four number density fields to get lower number densities and retrain the model at these lower number densities. So here I'm showing the K value when the cross correlation coefficient drops to 0.7. So if you remember earlier, the cross correlation coefficient starts at 1 and drops. So this is the K value when it drops to 0.7. So the lower this value is, the worse the reconstruction performance is, and x-axis is number density. So this is ES3, the standard reconstruction algorithm. So ES3 is very insensitive to the change of number density until about 10 to the minus 2, and it starts to drop. And then this blue line is the hybrid approach. So we can see that the method performance degrades with lower number density. So it's very sensitive to the change of number density. And then we build a toy model to try to capture CNN's behavior, and it agrees with CNN pretty well. So we see that there's
So for LRG.
Okay, so yes, so LRG, LG, that's from DESI, that's about this region. So the performance, so the improvement is less significant. So we can see that there's advantage with using higher number density samples. I have a backup slide that shows this toy model, but I can talk about that later for details. Okay, so All right, so here I'm just showing one example for the Hadow field. I use a number density of 2.3 times 10 to the minus 4 megaparsec cube per megaparsec cube. Bias about 2.3. So the effective bias, so b squared m bar, that's about 1.2 times 10 to the minus 3 per megaparsec cube. So that's similar to the LRG sample in DESI. So that's the improvement. So it's not as significant as we saw in the matter density field. But there's still some improvement.
So the previous talk was showing if you randomly choose dark matter particles with a given number density.
That's a subsample of the field, yeah. So you don't compare to the same number density because bias boosts the signal, and so you compare to b squared m bar. Okay. So b squared m bar, that's about 1.2 times 10 to the minus 3. And so that you can compare to about 1.2 times 10 to the 3 Schott noise field, no bias. That's very similar.
Okay. Well, so here I guess we can see that, you know, so the scale where r is 0.7 is like 0.2 something for this number density, and then if you then go back to the previous, I guess we can then see how different it is. So it is better, right? I mean, for the bias sample, right? I mean,
like, so that's here is about 0.2. Like. It's about 0.2, I think.
Wait.
Like 0.3.
For the next slide, was like 2 to the 10 to the minus 4. I'm
actually B squared then. Yeah, B squared and bar. Well, so 0.7 is here, then that gives us about 0.2, 0.25 maybe. And then here that's 10 to minus 3, that's sorry. that's similar, right?
Yeah, it's similar.
Okay, so all right, so yeah, so far we talk about the simulations without PNG, and now I'll add simulations with PNG. So FNL plus minus 100. Okay, so I train the model with no PNG simulations, and then I apply that to simulations with PNG. So here's the performance. So this is cross correlation coefficients again, and here I also add another metric that's what we call propagator. So we use that a lot in BO analysis. So this is very similar to cross correlation coefficient, but it's normalized differently. So this shows the amplitude information also, whereas R of K just has the phase information. So in both of these two figures, we can see that the method works very well for other FNL values as well. Okay, so now we have a reconstructed density. Now we can go to constrain primordial non-Gaussian entity. Okay, so we'll first take a look at information at field level by fitting templates. Okay, so here this is reconstructed delta. So I call delta CNN. So I expand this perturbatively up to second order. So here the BG is the linear density. This is the linear term. Delta FNL is a new term that we introduce. That's defined as phi g squared m phi. M phi has the transfer function. And then these three are the usual quadratic terms, growth shift, tidal terms. So in simulation, I have initial conditions. So I can use initial condition for this delta g. And then I can also use that to compute growth shift tidal terms. So then I have all of these terms. So then this is all linear, so I can do a least square fit to fit these five coefficients. Okay, so this is fitting results for reconstructed delta at ratio of zero. So the errors here are standard deviation for the 90 simulations, and each simulation I have is 1 gigaparsec volume. So this is errors in 1 gigaparsec volume. So we can see that BG is very close to 1 as expected. B2, B shift, B title are very close to 0. So this suggests that reconstruction can remove most of the nonlinearities. And this is the FNL. So we see that there's a little shift at FNL for the mean at the FNL 0. If we account for this shift for FNL plus minus 100, then we can get about plus minus 92. So there's slight bias.
Sorry, question. Why are all these other biases so close to 0?
So this is the second order term. So and that's nonlinearity from gravity. So by doing reconstruction, we're removing the gravity-induced nonlinearity. Okay, so this should be small, smaller than without reconstruction. Okay, so but this is symmetric around FNL zero. FNL zero, and but more importantly, this error is much smaller. So here we have about 5 for 1 gigaparsec volume, and so if we have more than 2 gigaparsec volumes, so for example, DESI has more than 2 gigaparsec volumes, then we can expect that this error to be about 2. So that's closer. So that's getting close to our goal of measurement error less than 1.
So this is for some sample of halos.
Sorry, this is matter field. Oh, did I not say that? Oh, so we're going back to matter field now. So this is all matter field.
Okay, so that's why BG is so close to 1.
Right. Okay. Right. So yeah. Sorry. This is matter density field. So the analysis. Yeah. So, right. So. Yeah. So from here, the analysis are all matter density field.
So does this mean for now supposed to be 0, method predicts minus 11 plus minus 4, 3 sigma FNL
prediction? Oh, so this is supposed to be 0.
Yeah.
And so it predicts a shift, and so that's some systematics we need to calibrate. Yeah, right. So it's systematic. So I'll talk about later about why there's a bias that I think why there's a bias. But right, so there's a shift and so there's a bias, but the error is much smaller. And then I also fit a nonlinear density field. So here's the fits. B two B shift B title. If we compare to the F two coefficients from F two kernel, that's very close. So this suggests that this expansion works, and FNL fits. Also, there's shift, there's bias, and also errors larger. So this suggests that reconstruction can significantly reduce the nonlinearities at second order, and at the same time preserve most of the PNG information and give us tighter constraints. So this is a rough comparison because we have different K cuts, but this just shows that there's much improvement with reconstruction. Okay, so this is redshift 1 fits. The error is a little smaller, and we also see this shift, but if we account for this shift again in the mean for FNL 0, then we can get FNL plus minus 100 at about plus minus 92. It's again symmetric around FNL 0, with larger volumes in the survey, then it'll get better with the measurement error about 1. So that's getting even closer to our goal. And this is the nonlinear fits again. The improvement is slightly smaller.
Yeah, may I ask a question? So here you have cuts at pretty small k, right? your method of this reconstruction was very like CNN was important at short distances. I understood that K like for the one, but here you put K cut small. So yeah. So why do you need this CNN reconstruction for that?
Okay. Sorry. It's very hard to hear you clearly. Could you?
Oh, do you hear me now?
Time, please. Is your thing connected to the speaker? Is your speaker on the speaker for your laptop?
Oh, maybe.
She's not on Zoom, is she?
Oh, yeah, I'm not on Zoom.
You're not on Zoom.
Yeah, okay. This is the room Zoom.
The room has two speakers somehow.
You say it again, Sergey, but just like slower.
Yeah, my question was about basically the link between reconstruction and these results for FNL, because reconstruction was good for high K, as I understood. I mean, that was important. But now you put K cut to be pretty low. So,
oh, I see.
So okay. Why do you need the reconstruction at all? Yeah,
right,
that's
okay.
What I'm confused.
Okay. So the K cuts is after these square terms. So these square terms have small scale information. And the K cuts after I compute all these three terms, so the square terms. Does that answer your question?
Well, no, I'm not sure I'm getting. So do you use the data up to K cut only, or use data for high K's as well? I mean, the density field.
Yeah. Okay. So when we compute the quadratic terms, that's before K cut. So that use the small scale information. And then after that, when we do the fits, then we have a K cut.
Okay, I have to think about it. Thank you. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So, all right. So we also find a degeneracy between FNL and those.
I still have a question.
Yes.
Go back to the slides. Another one. Yes. So this one, you say the top and bottom. The top one you're using CNN. The bottom one you're not using CNN.
Yes.
Right. And the errors are twice as big, but the central values haven't really changed very much. So it's I don't know.
Yeah. Right. So yes. So the shift at FNL zero, that's larger. Although if we consider this shift for FNL plus minus 100, the center value, yes. That's about 95.
It makes me think that these are overestimating the error somehow, because, I mean,
these are correlated, right? Because they're using the same realizations, right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. They're very close to each other. So why is the error twice as big? If it's the same number, it should be the same error, basically. So
Wait, sorry. So these errors are bigger than these, you mean?
I think the error is twice as big as you pointed out, but the central values are almost the same.
Yeah.
So
these are not independent calculations, right?
I agree, they're not independent. So that means the errors shouldn't be independent. I mean, basically, if the top one is plus or minus four error, probably bottom one is similar error. I mean, if you're making something noisier, then the central value should also shift. And I'm saying the central value doesn't seem to shift, even though your error is twice as big. So, I'm just, that's the thing that puzzles.
The last one by 5, the same as the error is by 7.
Maybe, okay. I'm reading too much into this. Okay, so there is a little bit more error. Yeah. I feel it's something that doesn't quite sound right, but maybe
okay. They're
not as close as I think they are.
Maybe the first one.
The first one, yeah, maybe just this. Okay, that's okay. Maybe we should move on.
Okay, I'll talk to you later. Okay, so we also find the degeneracy between FNL and the quadratic bias terms. And the most degeneracy comes from FNL and B2. And so this suggests that we must constrain them together. Otherwise, we'll underestimate error. Okay, so there are some possible sources I can think of for this bias that we see. So first, reconstruction might distort the PNG. So even though we train PNG, we train the model without PNG, and the goal is to just remove the nonlinearity from gravity. But after we apply our model to simulations with PNG, that might still distort a PNG signal. The second one is that there might be imperfect, yes. So it is true that the reconstruction is imperfect. So there's leftover nonlinearity. And so that's related to the third point. So there's degeneracy between F and L and other Bayes terms. So there's crosstalk between F and L and B shape B title terms. So that can also cause bias. And also in this model, we only include up to second order terms. So there might be higher order terms that we don't include in the model that still contributes. And so those terms go back to F and L and B2B should be title terms. So these can be some of the causes of the bias. Okay, so in simulations we can do this. We have initial conditions. But in real observations, we do not have initial conditions. So to do this, it'll be much more complicated. So we can estimate this delta G at the same time as we fit other coefficients, and that'll involve full modeling and field level inference. So that's more complicated. And so now let's take a look at the Bayes spectrum as a summary statistic. Okay, so the optimal Bayes spectrum estimator, it has this form. This is phi squared cross-correlated with delta, and phi is the primordial potential, and it can be computed using this linear delta. M phi has the transfer function, and here's also linear delta, and both these two delta, linear delta, can be approximated by the reconstructed delta, and this phi squared is in square in the configuration space, So in Fourier space, that's a convolution. And then when we add another delta, and using this expression again, then we can get another phi in the integrand. So that's an integral of the primordial Bayes spectrum. So right, so this estimator is an integral of Bayes spectrum. Okay, so before we take a look at how this estimator looks like, and then we will first take a look at the reconstructed phi square field. This is R of k and g of k again, but not for delta, but for the phi square field. So here I'm plotting latent field and then the HE18 algorithm and then CNN plus HE18. So here the latent field, we can see that even if we smooth at 20 megaparsec, which is very large smoothing, this field is still very far from the initial field. And then CNN with HE18 is much better than using this algorithm alone. And I also include another smoothing. It's a cosine filter. It's a very sharp smoothing, and that improves a little bit. OK, so here's the Bayes spectrum estimator. I multiplied that by k cubed, such that the error bars are about the same on all scales. And so here's F and L plus 100, 0 minus 100. We're comparing the CNN with IC initial condition. So we can see that there's still some discrepancies. And so the estimate is biased, and that's consistent with the temporary fits. And I did a single parameter forecast. For CNN, we can get the measurement error about 50. And pre-reconstruction, so the nonlinear density field, we can get about 100. So that's about 2 times improvement. But as I said earlier, we see degeneracy between F and L and other Bayes terms. So we need to consider them all together. And so this estimate is slightly optimistic, without including other Bayes terms. But the point here is to show that there's much improvement with reconstruction. Okay, so to do this more accurately, then we can also compute other similar estimator. Okay, compute a similar estimator for other fields, for other templates. Okay, so let me summarize. So there's great opportunities to probe inflation in this current era of cosmology, when we have very powerful cosmological experiments. And I showed that reconstruction with hybrid approach shows promising constraining power for, for parametric non-Gaussianity. And the template fits at the field level are slightly biased, but the error is much lower. And the bispectral estimator is consistent with template fits. And we see that there's about 2 times improvement in error with reconstruction. But the bispectral estimator, the estimates is much worse because it doesn't have access to the information, a lot of information in the field, so it doesn't have access to the phases, which contains quite some information. And so in the near future, so first, as I mentioned, we don't have an initial condition in reality. So to do the field level fits, we need to estimate the delta G at the same time of fitting other coefficients with field level inference and using forward modeling. So that's more complicated, but that would give us more information. Or if we stick with bispectrum, then we can estimate each template term to do it more accurately. But still, bispectrum doesn't have all of the information in the field. And then in real observations, we also have bias tracers and high Schall noise. So bias tracers that can boost our signals because in galaxy field, the PNG signal would be stronger. But then high Schall noise in observation that'll compromise the reconstruction. So there's some trade-offs. And going to real observations, we also have larger volume, so that's a plus. And then we have systematic, so that's also a compromise. So there's quite some trade-offs going to real observations. And then finally, here I only talk about local type. The PNG, there's other types, equilateral or orthogonal, and we think that we expect that the constraining power would also be much stronger for other types. And it's more important there because for the other types, we can't use the scale-dependent bias to constrain FNL. Okay, so I guess I don't have much time. I was going to talk about some other things I want to do, but I will skip that and just.
4 minutes.
Oh, but yeah, but I suppose there's more questions. Oh.
Yeah, we'll ask specifically about the cases.
I can take 1 minute. All right. So this is right. So okay. So reconstruction with CNN, that's like mapping two fields from the nonlinear density field to the initial density field. So here we can do similar things to map a galaxy field to the matter field at the same redshift. And so the goal is to learn the galaxy bias and not fit the galaxy bias in the expansion explicitly. So that's something I plan to do. So that's a similar idea. Okay, and then large scale structure across CNB KSD. That's another thing I want to do. So this is to constrain just the local type using the scale dependent bias technique with multi tracer. So I plan to do that with DESI cross ACT. So the benefit with this method is that derived velocity field from KSD map that has lower noise on large scales. And so here I'm plotting this this scale-dependent bias using the DESI LRG error bars, year one LRG error bars. So it can barely resolve FNL 30. And then with KSD method, this the errors would be much lower on large scale because it has the k-square dependence, but the galaxy field, the Schall noise, is here, so that's large. So with the KSE method, we can improve the signal to noise, so that'll be very helpful. And then that's a multi-tracer approach. So we are cross-correlating the unbiased velocity field with the galaxy field, so that can reduce the cosmic variance. Okay, so I won't go into any more details, but I'm happy to talk about this in afternoon. Okay, so I'll leave my summary here and answer more questions. Thank you. Yes.
So it looks like what you're doing is, so basically you're improving the construction, but the last function for the construction is getting the initial density field as good as possible. Actually, I mean, maybe you could tell me what the last function is for your reconstruct, for your CNN.
You mean the last function?
Yeah.
So it's comparing each data, each grid point, so the reconstructed field, reconstructed density. It's an MSE loss, so comparing reconstructed density with the initial density, and so the difference squared and the summed version is MSE loss.
If you think about the all possible initial conditions that could lead to a particular final distribution, I mean, you agree that you won't be able to perfectly reconstruct the initial conditions. There will be basically a range of possible initial conditions that could give you the same final condition. Given the error, basically.
Okay.
So basically, whatever the construction does is maybe make it the mean of that distribution. But in reality, there would be many, many different possibilities with different likelihoods.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, right. So my reconstruction is deterministic, so I'm not producing a distribution. So, yeah. So. With some other models, so for example, the diffusion model, they produce a distribution, so they predict an error bar, so that gives a distribution. Right. So then
the question is, the fact that you have a deterministic reconstruction, wouldn't that bias the statistics of your initial conditions? Because if there is an uncertainty, there is some range, then you get the mean right, but there is no guarantee that you're going to get the second or third order moments, right?
Mm. Okay. Yes. So okay. Yeah. So to make it more accurate and to include the uncertainty in reconstruction, then I should include errors from uncertainty.
And I think maybe just one last question: would it be maybe more economical to just instead of reconstructing the initial condition, just get one FNL, like train like you input into your CNN the final field, and it just gives you one value, which is the FNL.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
That's possible, I guess.
Would you believe that result, though?
I mean, that would circumvent this question of systematic biases, because it just,
Well, just building a larger black box around it.
Exactly. It's a huge black box. Right. But I'm saying at least you're training on what you want, not on kind of this. There's this extra step which can introduce systematic errors. I think if you skip that extra step, which is basically going from the constructed initial conditions to statistics, if you skip that and just get the statistics, get FNL directly from the raw data. And this, if your training is well, then it shouldn't be any systematic error.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's a good idea. Thank you.
That's related.
Okay.
Even for like high spectrum estimation, for it seems to be like the optimal statistic is to apply the decoupler into my spectrum. Spectrum estimator is biased. Like there's a normalization. So I don't think this is really worse. Like I don't think
the word bias
is kind of a loaded term, but I don't in this context I don't think it's like a great problem.
Okay.
There's just some normalization.
So is it well understood that what the Zeldovich displacements do to the 3-point function? Does that generate a local type shape somehow implicitly?
Okay.
Do we know what type of shape that would generate? Because you can see at the level of the power spectrum, it's undoing some of the gravitational nonlinearity, but that doesn't tell you anything about what it's doing to the higher point functions.
Right, so Zeldovich doesn't produce the three-point statistic correctly, so it can estimate the B2 B shift. I think it can produce the B2 and B title terms correctly, but it will get the B shift wrong. And so the three-point function is not accurate. But whether that mimics the shape of FNL, I'm not sure. But that's a scale independent. I will need to think about that. But thank you.
So any more questions online? Okay, great. So Cindy will be around, I guess, for Tuesday and Thursday, and Wednesday you'll be.
I'll be at UW, but I can also come over here if people want.
Okay, great. Oh yeah, and also I guess we'll have dinner. Actually, is it today or tomorrow? Okay, well, at some point there'll be dinner. Okay, yeah. Well, thanks again, Cindy, for the talk.
Thank you.